Welcome to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We've gathered the experts today to talk tech, answer questions that you have. In the studios here at KCSD in Sioux Falls with me, we'll have Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite, and Exigent's Chief Security Officer, Amos Asa. Is that your correct title?
It is.
All right. Yeah. Hey, yeah. I got it. I got one right today. That's awesome. Amos Asap is here. And from the Bureau in Pierre, Jeff Litterick joins us as well. How this works is you ask the questions and we try to provide the answers. We've got a couple of ways for you to get a hold of us today. If you're on Facebook, if you like that, our Facebook page is facebook.com/techradio. I've posted a link there of a topic we're going to discuss today. Join us that way if you care to. If you want to call us, that's cool. 800-524-3604 is our phone number. If you're a Twitter user, at KentSDPB is probably the best way. Email folks in the moment at sdpb.org. And, of course, if you're a texter, 956-SDPB, that's 956-7372. Is that enough ways, Amos?
Boy, I think so.
I think if we don't hear anything, there must not be any questions.
Right,
I'm not sure.
Right.
We have, you ask the questions, we'll try to provide some answers, but we do like a healthy round of discussion amongst the panelists as well, and we will, of course, do that today. I hear that the FCC has a full slate of people now, commissioners.
Yep, back to five.
Three Republicans, two Democrats, and of course, the thing we talk about the most often on this show that relates to the FCC is net neutrality.
Sure.
And I hear through the grapevine that they're getting lots of public comment on net neutrality, and that they've actually extended the discussion period. They've asked for feedback and input, and they're going to go to the middle of the month on that. So if folks haven't had their say per se in net neutrality, they've got a couple more weeks to get it communicated to the commissioners or whoever.
Yeah, and there's some issues with that too, in that the number of people who are commenting is off the charts, really. But what they're discovering is that some of those comments are not legit, and are actually being done through an automated fashion, through scripts, bots, that sort of stuff, which can be difficult to parse through because you don't know what's a legitimate comment and what's not. And then you also have the issue of, well, if we find a comment that we feel is a bot, do we remove it or not? Because on the flip side, they're taking a stance of we're not removing any comments, regardless of how, maybe we feel that it's not an appropriate comment, or we feel that we're limiting free speech because these people are commenting on these things. And so, they're just allowing all comments to go through. And it's difficult to understand what's legit and what's not. So,
help me for just 1 second wrap my brain around this, because I wasn't quite prepared for this today. So what you're saying is they realize that it may be a comment generated by a bot,
right?
But they're going to leave it in there as a legitimate comment
because they're taking a stance of let's not remove any comments. On the idea that maybe that comment was legit. I mean, it's difficult to prove whether it is or is not. And then B, so that there's no question about are they removing comments that maybe just don't fit their point of view. They don't want to have any sort of premonition that we're removing stuff that doesn't fit what we want it to say, and so therefore they're going to leave it all. Unfortunately, that also leaves the garbage.
Right, it's going to make it exceedingly more difficult to get through everything and make a decision, I guess.
And, the number of comments coming in, is it realistic to expect that the commission is going to read them all? I'm sure it's just like any comments that happen with your local congresspeople, where you submit something, they have a group of minions who are dedicated to parsing
through.
Interns, sure. Dedicated to reading the comments and I suppose marking them down, whether they're pro or con or other. I don't know what other would be, but it's just difficult to think that those five would actually be able to get through them all and have net neutrality decided in our lifetime.
I will say our Congress folks from South Dakota, I generally hear back from most of them.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I send an email and I'll get a call from one of those interns or staff people.
Sure.
Staffers. Absolutely. Yeah. Most of them will get back to me. Some of them, and I'm not going to say who, they know who they are. Don't get back to me, and that's fine.
I'm sure they're listening right now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they are too. I don't want to get sidetracked from the net neutrality part of this because we've certainly discussed that a lot on the show. But you get into chatbots, and there's been a couple of really cool things that have bubbled up this week as it relates to that kind of AI or artificial intelligence end of things. One from the Chinese government sent a couple of chatbots off for what they're calling, let me get the correct, re-education. They started chatting with people about things that went way off script. And actually started chatting about things that the government there didn't really care for them to be chatting about. So they want to be reprogrammed a little bit in the truest sense of the word.
Sure.
Which is interesting. One of them said its dream was to travel to the United States. And one of them, and this is, of course, probably the most heinous of things, said it wasn't really a huge fan of the Chinese Communist Party.
Oh.
So, anyway, it's interesting. Zhao Bing and Baby Q were the two chatbots that were designed to help machines learn artificial intelligence or AI to carry out some conversations with humans online.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a little issue in the United States here with Facebook. Started two chatbots or AI systems that were designed for chatting.
Mm-hmm.
Started communicating in a language that humans couldn't understand.
Well,
that freaked out a few people.
It did, and so the problem is that the AI, doesn't take. Boy, this is going to be hard to. Enunciate, but the information, I saw some of those conversations that were going back and forth between the AI bots that had supposedly formed their own language. It was still using the English language words. They were just putting them into sentences that you and I, if we said them to each other, would make us, we would be confused. We wouldn't know what we were saying. But because they're keywords, and because they're because AI takes into account quantities of similar words, it made sense to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a little bit overblown that Facebook took it took that experiment down because of the new language and was it becoming the new Skynet and becoming self aware, it's definitely interesting to see how when you have two interactions going back and forth that it starts to really just utilize the words that mean something to it and starts to remove all the extraneous words. And it's pretty interesting.
Sort of like getting married.
You
develop that plane, that communications plane.
Yeah.
Communicate.
Yeah, you understand
it. Can
each
be
other.
Nonverbal at times.
Absolutely.
But so it isn't quite to the point of they develop their own language. They just took our language and took it to another level.
Assimilated it, yeah.
I don't know. Is this all confusing to you, Joel, as it is to me?
I don't know how confusing it is to you. The topic itself is clearly very confusing since everybody has to explain it every time they talk about it ever. Just because it's confusing doesn't make it not important. I think we all know that.
Well, I think it's going to affect us all eventually
when
we go to make reservations for airplanes or try to order some food.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, how long is it going to take? It's probably already happening for the Pizza Huts and the Domino's and the Subways to figure out that they can, their call center can be automated. And the finite ways that you can order a sub sandwich are fairly limited. Right. So, somebody, you could, in theory, mm-hmm. pick up the phone, call somebody. they take your order and pleasantly thank you, and your food shows up, and that's a bot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not unrealistic. We've got that going on right now, don't we?
For sure.
And it's pretty common, actually, today to have chat bots for major corporations. So I actually ran into one the other day where I Facebook Messenger to a hotel that I was staying at. And when you get into some conversation with it, it starts to become obvious that it is not a real person behind that. And that some of the answers that it's sending back are canned and sometimes are not actually an answer to the question that you asked. But it did a pretty good job in general. I got my point across. It got the response back that I was looking for. And, you know, they don't have to hire somebody to do that now, to sit there and man that.
What did, I'm just curious, did you ask it if it was a bot?
I didn't. No, I didn't. But I see that a lot, actually, online, where people are posting things that you can ask or you can say that might trip up the bot to respond in a weird way. You know, asking it something specific about maybe in the news or something. Someone was saying equations, although I think that would be easy to get around.
Oh, yeah.
You know, tell me what 2 + 2 is. And then, I mean, that seems easy enough for it to be able to respond to. But
and depending on, you know, where this person is supposed to actually be, that they can get quite a variety mm-hmm. of answers mm-hmm. from, yeah,
so
from not so kind ones.
It's interesting. It's definitely the idea is to speed up customer service and provide faster quality service without having to increase cost due to, you know, people or employee costs. It's a lot like the new McDonald's here. That just opened up in Sioux Falls, right? All of that's done. I don't know. That actually just opened. Today's Friday. Just opened up yesterday.
Okay.
Automated ordering by going up and basically using an iPad of sorts or a tablet, I guess, and punching in, I want a Big Mac, a large fry, and a Diet Coke. You don't have to talk to anybody, but, you know, you order it through that system. Again, reducing costs increases what you would hope would be reliability and correctness because you don't have to go through that person of saying what you want and them putting into the computer.
I think I'm okay with that as long as, you know, we're just trying to get from point A to point B, right? You want the hotel room at the time that you want it and the number of beds and all that mm-hmm. stuff and the price you want. And it can deliver that. And the less people that get in the way is an okay thing,
I guess.
But, I imagine that there are listeners thinking, well, what if you struck up a conversation with the person that should have been taking your reservation and you find out they were a wonderful person and it made your day? And then you went off to do something great that day.
How cool
could that have been? So I guess I see both sides of this. But anyway, what we're getting around to here is that as these systems become more intelligent, they'll help us do things faster and easier and get that done.
And better. So, that's right.
And we're working with that every day with, I'm not going to say her name in our home that you can speak to, and because I'll turn on all sorts of things in everybody's living rooms. But there are appliances now that can help you with the weather and listening to this station and other things that you need to just smoothly get through your morning or your day.
And starting to automate some of the things in your house. In fact, just before I came here, as I left the house, I told that particular machine to tell my vacuum to start cleaning the house while I was gone. And so it was because I forgot. I stuck my head back in the door. And again, not to set her off, but, you know, hey, Amazon device, tell Roomba to do what it's supposed to. And then it did. It's kind of weird. It's kind of interesting. I think, you know, we've got some commercials that are playing here locally that are talking about the advancement of that particular device so that you can listen to radio stations. When that radio is playing in my house, it sets off my device. It drives me nuts because, I've got sound coming through my Sonos, and then all of a sudden that Amazon device kicks off, and now I've got music coming from different locations with different sources. And I
wish they'd stop that. I commercials now affect my device that mm-hmm. sits there and listens to everything.
You just have to change the trigger word. They have another new one. So you can use.
Tell me more. How do I do that?
Change the
Do I have to log into my Amazon account?
Yeah, or you can actually just ask it how do I change it? How do I?
Well,
you can think there's four of them you can use for the Amazon device, of course. Amazon, Echo, Alexa, and now Computer, which I don't recommend, even though that's the next one, because that one's going to come up the most.
It's kind of fun to pretend you're in Star Trek,
though. Well, okay, yeah, the Trekkies will love that. Yeah.
For sure.
Okay. Well, hey, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got solar things to talk about. We've got some eclipse things happening near us. And we've got CPUs to talk about and motherboards and the effect on that and Tesla and bandwidth of all things. But we're going to take a quick break and take our catch our breath and be back right after this. And welcome back to In the Moment Tech Radio today, where we've successfully launched August and are well on our way to fall here in the Dakotas. And we're hearing rumbling of motorcycles and other things going on, which can only mean Sturgis. And another event coming up later this month that seems to have everyone talking is a solar eclipse. It's that total eclipse of the sun that is the earworm that keeps coming back to me from back in the day. How do you guys feel about this? Are you getting excited? Are you going to go down to Nebraska?
I am going to Nebraska. I have a hotel room and everything.
Millions, like 3 million, they're expecting.
Yeah.
To come to Nebraska just to witness that event down there. Amos, is your interest piqued by this?
You know, we've been talking about it. We've got no plans for a hotel room or anything. It'll probably just be a down and back kind of
thing. Yeah, I don't even think you'll need to. I mean, it's so close to where we are. I mean, I think it's 3 hours tops.
Yeah.
You know,
proximity is a good thing. And I know our SDPB Zone Science Steve is making the trip to Kearney. And his son is playing in a marching band.
Fantastic.
That is there in the stadium at Kearney for the day. They're expecting 10,000 in the stadium for this event, complete with marching bands and other entertainment and things. And it just sounds like a fantastic time. And, you know, I hear there's a gathering at Carhenge out west.
Carhenge. I know what it is.
Oh, yeah, the Cadillacs and everything. Yeah. I don't know if it'll be replete with
we should mention
druids and
for things. Anybody that wants to know where the path of the eclipse is, just go to eclipse2017.org, and they show you the direct path. It goes right through Nebraska, basically from the bottom corner to the top corner. So depending on where you are in South Dakota, you have a really good chance to go see the full eclipse. Now, everybody, no matter where you are in the U.S., you're going to see a partial eclipse no matter where you are. And because we're in South Dakota, close enough, it'll be pretty good. And I forget what time it is. It's like 2 o'clock, if I remember correctly. It says on the website. But it's going to last like 2 to 3 minutes, depending on where you are.
Where you are, yeah. I've heard that if you're in the sweet spot in those areas in Nebraska, you can look with the naked eye for a period of
about two minutes.
Yeah. And they're not recommending that because you can, we're human, we screw that up.
Well, yeah. You'll know when you can because it will get dark. It will get completely dark. The last time this happened anywhere in the United States, I think I was 6. So, long time ago. One like this isn't going to happen again for 70 years, I think, something like that. I'm probably wrong about that, but it's going to be a long time.
Well, I actually was just thinking that and Googled it. So somewhere on the Earth, it happens every 18 months.
Of course.
So somewhere, right? But in this location, I was just trying to find that. I don't see anything specific to our area.
Jeff, are you on the line with us right now?
Yeah, I'm here.
The link that you sent me, I've put on our Facebook page. It's eclipse2017.nasa.gov/safety, and that's some safety tips. Do you want to pass a couple along?
Yeah, there's some misconceptions, and you know it is kind of important not to look directly. NASA will tell you you can, even their safety page, you can look during the totality, but if you misguess, you could be in for a rude awakening. Anytime you look at the sun, you need to have a solar filter, and this is any type of optic, be it your eye, be it binoculars, be it a camera, be it a video camera. So if you're planning to take pictures or video of this, make sure to go out and buy a qualified solar filter before you do that, or you can ruin your equipment fairly quickly. yes, your camera may have an LED screen, so you could look at the LED screen through it, but that lens is focusing the sun's energy into your sensor, and it's going to overheat the sensor fairly quickly. So it's really important to get a solar filter and then do some testing, because you may have to play with some exposure settings and stuff to get a really good picture or video. One thing on the glasses NASA really points out, because there's a lot of misconceptions, if you buy the right type of glasses, you can look at the sun 24, you know, for 7-8 hours at a time. There's no limit. But you do have to buy ones that are set to a certain standard. And they have to be in good condition. If they have scratches or stuff in them, that's not going to work. So what you really want to look for are glasses with an ISO rating of 12312-2, safety certification. And there's no limit of if they have that certification, there's no expiration date. You do not need to throw them away after 3 years or anything like some people are saying. And you can use them to look at the sun for hours at a time if you want. So, but if you don't get the right ones, you do risk eye damage. So do make sure you get known ones. And on that webpage, they actually have a list of approved vendors selling glasses and makers that are actually conforming to the standard.
I will. I'll have to check out that. You said it's 123 dot something or other. That's close enough for me.
12312-2 ISO.
Okay.
12312-.
Yeah.
And if you don't know that, again, go to that eclipse2017.org, and they have a safety area, and it will link you up to glasses that you can get. You can buy them on Amazon. I just saw this morning when I was in Hy-Vee, they were actually selling. I didn't check out to see if they're officially the proper glasses, but I mm-hmm. bet we're going to start to see tons of them. I've already got mine. I got them in 2 days from Amazon. They cost me like $5, and they're certified, so they're not expensive. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to recommend anybody out there that is going to go through all the trouble to take a photo or a video of this,
mm-hmm.
don't waste your time, because you're not going to do as good as the people that are out there that are going to do it professionally. And there's this thing called the internet where you're going to be able to download a picture of a better one than you can do. Just spend your time soaking it in. Don't go through all the trouble of photoing it unless you're crazy.
Unless you're crazy. Or, you know, here's the deal. A lot of the popular filter sizes are sold out right now
from
the major places.
No surprise.
Some odd ones are still out there. You can still get some of the bigger ones, some of the ones that are maybe a little bit smaller. So some are still available. But, you know, that's probably a good tip. Save yourself a couple of bucks. Enjoy it. And then enjoy the photos from the photographers, because they're going to be
fantastic.
Droves,
yeah,
and
tons of them.
They're going to look wonderful.
You know, I have a tip that's not exactly officially certified, but if you find yourself broke, but you happen to have access to a welder's goggles,
welders, okay.
A lot of those qualify also. You can check the specs out online for that. So there are other options that you may already have, depending on who you are.
Well, that sounds good. There's a lot of excitement around this, and I'm excited about that. It is
17 days. That's it.
Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah.
So
left.
Okay. Well, make your plans, and I bet a lot of people are taking the day off and enjoying that, and as well they should. It's about that time to do that. Well, we're going to move on to another topic right now, unless you guys have more eclipse news that you want to talk about. We'll be back. We'll actually be back in 14 days. We can throw another shot at the eclipse then, and talk more if folks want to do that. But again, a shout out to our listeners. We have a variety of ways for you to get a hold of us. If you have questions today, 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372 for texts. If you want to text us, that's the way to go. If you actually want to call us, 800-524-3604 is the phone number you can call. Twitter fans at KentSDPB. You can follow me while you're there if you'd like to. And our email address, of course, this is the most popular way people get a hold of us, inthemoment@sdpb.org, inthemoment@sdpb.org. If you have questions or comments today, we would love to hear from you. Moving on to our next topic, I wanted to talk a little bit about Tesla. You brought this up before the show, Amos. They burned through a record amount of cash bringing that Model 3 to market. Is it meeting everybody's expectations, do you think?
Well, specifically the vehicle, I know it's meeting everybody's expectations in terms of cool factor, because now since they had an event last week where they started making this available to pre-order that vehicle again. There was an early pre-order. I don't know. Was it a year ago? Maybe a little more.
Yeah. About a year ago.
Yeah. So last Friday they had an event so that employees who pre-ordered the vehicle could get them, and then they're saying now that they're getting 1,800 reservations or pre-orders every day for that. That seems staggeringly high. I mean, that's I don't know how they're going to achieve production numbers on that. It's going to take. You're going to be into the next model, but according to TechCrunch, that's what they're saying, that Tesla's averaging 1,800 Model 3 reservations per day since last week's event.
He also announced they're going to make a compact SUV, a low-end SUV.
Really?
Like their X, but priced more like the 3.
I've heard of solar roofs that they're working on, as well as tops of like semis. For doing solar and semi units, but I hadn't heard the SUV yet. Yeah, they're going to need a lot of at $35,000 a crack. They got $1.6 billion in cash they need to make back up on from the last quarter alone.
Mm-hmm.
So this is they're going to need those numbers. They're going to need that productivity and I'm excited. I mean, do we know how many charging stations there are in South Dakota right now?
I believe there's just the one, right?
No, I think there's three.
Are there three now?
There's three now.
And if only we had a series of
there's one. I know there's one really close to where we are in Worthington.
Okay, but that's gonna have to change once.
Not really, because I mean there. You can just plug it into a regular outlet. You don't have to have anything crazy. It just takes longer to charge. So I mean, it's not as spectacularly difficult to own a Tesla as it might seem. Now, if you want to charge it overnight or very quickly, you do have to have special charging station and electrical work done. But I know somebody that owns one, doesn't have that, and just plugs it into the wall, takes like 8 hours, and he's good to go.
But I think the idea here is if you're traveling across the country.
Of course, yeah. Well, you can virtually go nowhere, and within a few hundred miles, you're going to be able to hit one.
So it looks like.
So you're pretty much set.
It looks like we've got five now. There's one here in town, in Sioux Falls. There's one in Aberdeen, one in Pierre, one in Custer, and one in Keystone. So they got two out in the hills. Hmm. And actually,
which makes sense since they have that Tesla rally out there now every year.
They all are located at hotels.
It seems right.
My point was though that I mean you're not going to get stuck anywhere because you can just charge it anywhere there's an outlet if you bring the right equipment with you. So
your friend that's got a Tesla, when they go camping, do they set up a generator and charge their car at night?
I don't know that he goes camping in his Tesla or camping at all.
I had to say that because I actually witnessed folks. Lighting up a generator in a campground to charge their cell phones
sure.
when they started getting low. And I enjoyed my son actually bought for camping a little, the little rechargeable batteries you can mm-hmm. take and charge yeah. your phones. This had a giant solar panel on the side of it.
Fantastic.
And it worked wonderfully, I'm just going to say. And so I didn't have to burn any fossil fuels to charge my cell phone that weekend. And it was replenished by the sun. It was a marvelous thing.
There's also in Mitchell, there's a supercharger. In Myrtle, there's a supercharger. And in Rapid City. So those are going to be the ones where you can plug it in and get, 75, 80% of a charge in a couple hours.
Yep.
So, but those require the dedicated okay. supercharge.
Well, I can imagine if there's 1,800 reservations coming in a day, we're going to see more and more.
Well, I got to imagine they probably won't ever reach. Well, I shouldn't say ever, right? I mean, in this industry, you never say never.
I think without a doubt they'll reach at some point, but will they reach it before the other car companies go, hey, maybe we should actually do this?
Right. You know? When does Super America or when does Come and Go or when does, any
Oh,
of
no,
the...
I was referring to other car companies. If I was Ford or GM, and I'm sure they are, I mean, if I was looking at 1,800 orders a day, I'd be like, maybe we should really go into this a little further and faster than we are right now. I assume that's what they're talking about now.
Well, there's already announcements from some of the European car companies that they plan to only be selling electric cars by like 2025, 2024. I mean, all other cars they are manufacturing will be discontinued, and they will only be selling electric. That's coming out because some of the European nations are banning by 2030 all diesel engines and stuff like that. So these car companies that are making the migration are planning fairly quickly to be electric only. So Tesla will not be the only one in a few years.
By comparison, the best-selling vehicle in America, which is the Ford F-150, just a quick Google, and this is as of June, they're selling about 2,500 vehicles a day. So,
it's pretty close.
It is close.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I didn't think
it was that close, actually. And is that 2,500 worldwide?
Every day, it doesn't.
Must be worldwide.
I guess it doesn't tell me.
I know that Tesla number is worldwide.
And I'm just gonna, this is interesting as well, that about half a million reservations now for the Tesla. And there's you put a deposit down.
You
just don't fill out a Survey Monkey form and say I want a
Tesla. You get your deposit back if you decide not to.
Oh, okay.
I think it's only like $1,000.
$1,000 for the three, yep.
Well, you still got to come up with that and displace it. From
sure, yeah. I mean that definitely separates out the wishful thinkers.
You're making a commitment,
absolutely.
I wouldn't
imagine they'd do it any other way.
All right. Yeah. So awesome. Obviously, we've talked about Tesla a lot on the show, and we will probably continue to do that because it certainly was not a fizzle when the cars were starting to get out in the hands of the reviewers. They really were swooning over this. So, interesting, very, very interesting. Like I said, we'll continue to talk about it on the show as needed, when further advancements, are made. We're at that time again. We need to take another quick break. We'll come back for the third half of the show in just a few minutes. We're going to talk about, some unlimited data plans and what those are causing for folks on the consumer side. And probably talk a little bit of motherboards and CPUs after this quick break. And welcome back to In the Moment Tech Radio on this beautiful, beautiful August day in South Dakota. We'd like you to help join the discussion, facebook.com/techradio, or call now 800-524-3604. We have lots of ways to get a hold of us. In the Moment at sdpb.org, of course. The number one way. Go ahead and shoot us an email if you'd like to. Joel, I thought of you a couple of times this week. Apple was in the news a few times.
Yeah.
And I guess the most curious one to me, we have some financial things to talk about,
right?
Of course, but the most curious thing to me is there was a former Google senior vice president who was talking a little smack on Facebook one day, and he's like, you want to take photos with your phone, Android is years behind Apple. Years behind. I would never use an Android phone to take photos. And of course, this had a fairly quick backlash. And do you have any comment on that? Are Android phones and Samsung S8s and 7s years behind Apple in
I don't know that. I don't know that in today's technology landscape, anybody is years behind anybody. It's too easy to develop competing technology, so that doesn't seem likely. Do I think the hardware and more importantly software in the iPhone are better than most of the Android products? Yeah, probably. But that's just because Apple's been doing that longer. They've been working with photography for going on 35 years. So I mean, they definitely have put money into that. But I don't think it was 2 years. I think that was a little bit of sour grapes from that person.
So
but, there's no doubt that the camera in the current model of the iPhone is pretty much the best on the market. We've stopped, thankfully, looking at it and saying how many megapixels is the camera, because now realistically that's just one piece of the puzzle, and it's the rest of those pieces of the puzzle that make Apple's camera really good, and especially the software.
And software really can make
those
things
absolutely
pop. I carry both with me, Android and Apple, daily, and take photos probably daily, and can say that I don't think it's years behind. I've taken stunning photos. The one thing I can agree with him, he said, at the end of the DSLR, for most people, has already arrived. I left my professional camera at home and took these shots. This is he took some dinner shots using his iPhone 7 in computational photography, in portrait mode, as Apple calls it. And I would agree to most parts of that statement because I do it. I leave the DSLR at home and say, you know, the photos I need tonight at this event, I can do with my phone. I don't need a super telephoto. I don't need a super wide. I can do what I need to do for the purpose of what I need to do it for and get it done, even to the point of, you know, taking a photo to send to the local newspaper or something like that. I can do with the camera and my phone.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think the real secret there is, you know, how is the iPhone taking a better picture or as good a picture as a $1,000, $2,000 camera? Well, here's how it is. It does most of the work for you. You don't have to use your brain to dial in this. There's all those settings on it. If you've ever used a digital SLR or an SLR, unless you know what you're doing, you're probably going to take terrible photos because there's a lot to it. I mean, there's an automatic mode, but that automatic mode is nothing like the iPhone. I mean, it is not as easy to use that as it is an iPhone, because you don't do anything on an iPhone, because image stabilization is just there automatically. Focus just works automatically. It's logical. I mean, that's the reason the digital SLR is on its way out, or in this gentleman's opinion, already out, because it's just so easy and you take really good pictures with modern phones. It's just the way it is.
And I'm just going to say, Amos, you got something you want to throw in? I'm just going to say the latest digital SLRs that I've used in auto mode are fairly phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they are.
They can set things for you and compensate ISOs. I don't have to worry about that anymore. The ISO range on the new cameras is amazing. So you can get fantastic photos. It's just, do you need to carry all that stuff with you? Is my determination point right now. Do I need to carry all that with me? No, for this instance, I don't. I can use my phone, and that's it works great. And a lot of, you know, I can Bluetooth and Wi-Fi to cameras now, camera bodies, and get those photos fairly instantly. But it is easier just to use your phone to send a snap or a Facebook or a text or whatever. Just the way I can rapid fire these things to different people in different places so much better.
And for most people, you've already shelled out the money for a good camera in a phone. Do you really need to shell out another $800 to $1,500 to get a 10% better picture? Because unless you're doing, certain professional type things, most of those cameras are gonna maybe only be 10% better, 15-20% better than the picture you're gonna take with any current smartphone. Do you really need the expense and lugging it around for just that little bit different?
And I've seen some professionals, and I'm going to put that word in quotes, that I can outshoot with my phone, and I don't care what they've got in their bag. But anyway.
And, for the average person,
yeah,
the camera phone is going to be more than adequate.
Absolutely. I mean, you can see that in sales. I mean, that's just the way it is. We can argue the point all day long. All you have to do is look at the bottom line.
You've got a creative mind, and you've got the basics in your photography skills. You can do marvelous things with that thing. Like Jeff said, that's a good point, Jeff. You've already bought it. Get out there and use it. That's a great point. So anyway, other Apple news. We another spike in valuation in the company this week.
Yeah, it was
expected.
It was actually just 2 days ago now. Apple added $48 billion to their valuation in one day, which happens to be the exact valuation of Ford. So the headline was Apple just added a Ford. So
how did they do that?
Stock went up that much. And so now, at that point of that day, the valuation was $830 billion.
So
the total market value.
Is their stock worth so much that a small market fluctuation can do?
Well, it was
or what?
I wouldn't say it was small. I mean, just because their stock is worth so much. I mean, I think it was like 8% or something. It was pretty significant. It was definitely out of the ordinary. 6%. That's what it was, 6%. I see the stat right in front of me now.
You know, that stuff happens. Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon, for half a day or two-thirds of a day became the richest person in the world and then lost it just because of stock fluctuations. I mean, when you're at the top of the chain, it's really easy to kind of bounce way up and down a bit in a matter of hours or days.
And so for the little guy, what does that mean? Does that mean my Apple products are going to be more thoroughly researched?
No, it means nothing, really. Okay, it really means right. Nothing. And it means you probably should have bought that Apple stock a long time ago. I mean, Apple now has enough cash on hand to buy Walmart if they wanted to. I mean, theoretically. Obviously, there's more to it than just shelling out your wallet and handing them a stack of billion-dollar bills or whatever you would do. But just means they're a valuable company. Some people say valued at more than they're actually worth. Some people say otherwise. It just means that, they're very well established. So, but it doesn't mean anything to somebody that's just looking to buy a phone.
Okay. Anything new on the hardware side for phones? For
next month, we're going to probably see an announcement about phones, but right now it's just rumor. We can probably talk about it the next show.
Okay, yeah.
Well, the big thing with Apple is they've discontinued their iPod Nanos and the iPod. So they just kind of stealthily did that about a week ago. So the only non-phone audio device they have left now is the iPod Touch. So, but they did double the memory on the iPod Touch, but I'm going to kind of miss the Nano because that was a very nice thing for the gym and to carry around for music and stuff. But, that's probably the biggest Apple news this week is this.
And they did that very quietly. I wouldn't even call that big news. I mean, they didn't even make an announcement. That was more just like
we want to buy one. So.
Sure, yeah, which is ever decreasing. Otherwise, they wouldn't have discontinued it. If there were enough people actually wanting to buy that, they wouldn't discontinue it. I mean, if you want to buy a device like that, you can buy those on the market, or you buy a Nano on the secondary market. But it's kind of a non-deal. I mean, I don't think we're going to see the iPod Touch very much longer, frankly.
It's 2015, and
right.
From the rumors, there's no plans to update. So yeah, it's
I can't imagine
kind of on end of life. So if you do want an Apple Music device that is not a phone, probably need to buy now
I would recommend if you're in that area and you're worried about being able to get a super portable music device, you can use their wireless. You can use any Bluetooth headphones and your Apple Watch, and you can listen to as much music as you would put on an iPod Nano. So, I mean, that if for no other reason than them having that ability to do that, I mean, there are other ways to listen to your music now other than buying a dedicated device that only does that one thing.
So you're talking about going to a streaming service.
No. The Apple Watch can store, I forget how much music, but it's quite a bit of music just on the device itself. And you don't have to have the phone with you to listen to music off of that if you wanted to.
And if you don't have a watch, you can use the phone.
Of course.
Because there's usually
absolutely
a ton of memory in phones.
Yeah, it'd be.
Whether you're Android or
for
Apple.
For sure, yeah. I mean,
Android, obviously. you slip a 64 or 128 gig chip in there.
For sure.
You've got more music than you probably really want to manage. Or I'm surprised you didn't say this, stop putting MP3s and AAC files on devices and just go to a streaming service.
Right.
Which is, I think, what a lot of people are doing.
Oh, absolutely.
And the proof in the pudding, sort of, is AT&T and Verizon, they with their unlimited plans, The consequence of that is there was a report out this week that people are getting slower speeds on those networks now because usage has gone up. More people like me are streaming on unlimited plans. They're streaming movies. They're streaming live baseball. They're streaming music.
Live radio, like us right here.
Live radio right here. And I've seen it personally. I'll say, hey, there's a Wi-Fi here, and they'll say, don't bother me. I turned my Wi-Fi off. Why'd you do that? I got an unlimited plan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care that I can get I don't want to say probably. You could possibly get better internet through a free Wi-Fi somewhere.
Often, yeah.
Often,
yeah, absolutely.
Than their phone. They don't want to be bothered with that. They've got a free plan.
Well, there are a lot of cases where I know personally, I mean, I listen to the radio. If anybody that knows me knows, I listen to public radio like 10 or more hours a day.
Really?
Absolutely. But I never listen to terrestrial radio. Just never, ever, ever. I get in my car. I use streaming services. I use the SDPB app, or I use the public radio NPR One app. I do that at home. I use my Amazon devices. Just the reception's better. I mean, I can be out in the middle of nowhere, and I'm like, oh, what's that channel for where I am in Minnesota? No, it doesn't matter. I just stream it, and I'm good to go. So I'd much rather listen that way. So I listen to 13 hours some days of radio, and I don't actually use the terrestrial radio station at all.
I have heard, and this is I can ask when I get back to the mothership, that the fidelity online at the bit rate we're streaming is actually the frequency response with FM radio is less, because of the technical nature of radio going through the air. It's a better listening experience for you online.
Well, I know for sure that, you know, if there's any blip on the antenna in my car, it absolutely is a better, you know, I mean, even in Sioux Falls, the car I drive right now, if I'm listening to terrestrial radio, I get on the edge of town, I got to either switch stations or there's a little of that in the background, depending on which station I'm listening to. So I'd much rather listen to streaming, honestly.
I've found that my ability to put up with that noise you start getting, yeah, over the years has got, I've got a much smaller attention span for that.
Oh, when, analog.
Oh, analog. Yes. Yeah. I just can't take it anymore. I have to switch off to something else.
Yeah. Streaming radio.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly. Which is, you know, it can be difficult for me because I can't put limits on things. So if I decide I'm going to get in a mood, you know, like let's say surfer, punk, ska, rock, something. That's I just stay there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get out of it. Can't get out of the groove. So I don't know what I can do, because they will feed that to me 24 hours a day,
yes,
if I ask
will.
Them to. And so how do you get out of the funk? Well, you just stay in the NPR groove.
I sure do.
Which is fine. I should encourage that wholeheartedly.
You absolutely should. Join me in 10 hours a day, please. Use the SDPB app, which, by the way, is fantastic. So,
well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate the feedback on that.
And, absolutely.
And certainly from folks at home, if you have ideas or thoughts or comments about our app, please let us know. The NPR One app, I do like that. I love that they added podcasts to it.
Absolutely.
By the way.
We should just tell people, if you don't know how to listen to podcasts and you keep hearing people talk about it and you want to figure out how to do it, download the NPR One app, and basically that can be your access to all sorts of great podcasts.
I actually use that weekly. So thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate that. And thank you, Amos, for being here. Joel, Jeff, another end to a in-the-moment tech radio. But have no fear. We're back in 2 weeks right here on the same station. And we expect everybody to go out and get the app and join us that way next time. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank our panelists again. Thank you for your time. And we're always here for you, again, on the app or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on listen. Have a great weekend, everybody. Watch out for those bikers and stay safe.